Episode number 14 of The Champion is brought to you by Stamps.com. And you want to get to know this company because the holidays, they say they're almost here. Oh, you and I know they are here, and the post office is a zoo. It's traffic, it's parking, it's all those people sending their nice packages to their nice family. And while normally I would think they're nice, I hate them because they are in my way. And with Stamps.com, I don't have to look at them, I don't have to smell them, I don't have to talk to them, because I can do everything I would do at the post office right from my own desk. I buy and print official U.S. postage using my computer and my printer. I print that postage and then I slap it on the packages and I call the postman and he comes. Get some. What do I use Stamps.com for? That's right. Slap it up, flip it, and mail it out. Oh no. And right now you can get this special offer when you use my last name, Sigler. It's a no-risk trial plus a $110 bonus offer, which includes a digital scale and up to 55 smackers in free postage. So do not wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. You click on that microphone at the top of the homepage if you know what's good for you, and you type in Sigler. That is Stamps.com. Enter S-I-G-L-E-R. And now on with our story. Welcome to The Champion, book 5 in the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by author Scott Sigler. The Champion is suitable for ages 12 and up and contains graphic on-field violence. This novel, along with the first 4 books in the GFL series, is available as a full-length, unabridged, digital audiobook download from Audible, iTunes, and Amazon. As an ebook for Kindle, iPhone, iPad, Android, or any EPUB-compatible device, and in paperback. The Champion is also available as a signed, numbered, limited edition hardcover while supplies last. To order any version, go to scottsigler.com/store. Merry Christmas, junkies! How the heck... Hey, you want to hear my impression of Stoner Santa? That was it. Are you guys buying people stuff for Christmas? Have you considered buying the GFL books for Christmas? Maybe you should, because we can send it to anyone in the United States. Sorry, foreigners, we're too close to Christmas. And if you buy stuff at scottsigler.com/store as a gift, and you get that order in by noon Pacific time on December 16th, we can have it under your tree. What is the ideal present? Well, in my opinion, it is the first 4 paperbacks of the GFL. All 4 of them is only $40 plus shipping. That is a great present for your peeps who like sports, sci-fi, all that good stuff. The rookie, the starter, the all-pro, the MVP. We don't have the champion in paperback yet, but someday, junkies, we will. I hope you are gearing up for the holidays with your loved ones, with the loved ones of your loved ones. This is the time of year to bury all of that anger and animosity and all those other things. And just remember that all these people that you love or loved in the past, all your family members, they're not going to be around forever. So relax. Enjoy the holidays. Have a little eggnog. Uncle Morty made it. It's delish. And as you know, our podcast is so dang popular, thanks to you guys, thanks to you junkies, that we've got 2 sponsors. So let me spiel off about our other sponsor, pay some bills, then we'll get you caught up on the story, and then hit that line! Get on that sled! Push that sled! Go, 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 go! Our other sponsor would want me to stop screaming now, because that sponsor is The Great Courses. And once again, they are offering you an amazing deal on The Art of Storytelling. This is a course you can watch on your computer, on your smartphone, on your tablet. You can just get the DVD and watch it old school. You can listen to the audio, and it covers some cool stuff about the concept and practice of storytelling, something we use a lot in our daily lives. Every time you are talking to someone who explains something, you are storytelling. You storytell in school, in class, to your friends, at business, in meetings, to your spouse, to your kids. I know they don't listen to you, but they will if you were better at the art of storytelling. And Hannah Harvey, award-winning professor and storyteller, can help you with that by providing an interesting and entertaining look at the power of narrative. Now, I am a professional storyteller. I do it mostly on paper. Hannah's mostly talking about speaking, telling stories out loud. And there were a lot of tips in there I found that helped me formulate my thoughts before I speak and then while I am speaking, which is one of the cool skills she taught, how to keep track of your narrative process, how to keep track of that line of thought to make sure you give a smoother, more engaging, more entertaining talk. Now, if you aren't familiar with the Great Courses, you should check these guys out. They've been around for almost 25 years. That's a quarter century. They have over 500 lecture series on so many interesting subjects, all those different formats for you to watch them in. I want you to check out The Art of Storytelling. It's good for you, and it's great as a gift because The Great Courses has a special offer for you, junkies, just for the listeners of Scott Segler, 80% off the price of The Art of Storytelling, which brings that whole thing, all that information, all those lectures, under $40. But that savings is only available for a limited time. So go to thegreatcourses.com/Sigler. That's thegreatcourses.com/Sigler and check it out. Previously on The Champion, Quentin finally gets some time to enjoy his status as the Galaxy Bowl MVP. He's off to Earth. Then it's time to scout for new players at the Tier 3 tournament. Then, a return to Ionath and a stressful visit with Ma Tweedy. And now, The Champion, Episode 14. Article from UBS Sports. Headline: Teams set for T3 tourney. By PCOR The Assuming. Dateline, League of Planets. Are you ready for 2 weeks of hell? The Tier 3 tournament is about to take over the League of Planets. Once again, the best lower tier franchises are set to do battle in this grueling 13-day single elimination tournament, with teams playing every 3 days until a winner is crowned. Larger conferences, like the 51-team National Football League of the Planetary Union, put multiple teams into the T3 tourney. The NFL places the top 4 teams, the most of any T3 league. The Key Gridiron League places 3 teams, the champion, the runner-up, and the winner of the third-place game. The Chichana Football Collective and the Tri-Alliance Gridiron Association each place 2, their champion and their runner-up. The rest of the T3 conferences only place their champion into the tourney. If a team doesn't place high enough to make the T3 tournament, the GFL commissioner has the prerogative to appoint teams that excelled but fell short of their respective championships. These commissioner's choice selections fill out the 32-team tournament. Unlike upper-tier tournaments, where bracket positions are based on win-loss records, all first-round matchups in the T3 tournament are based on random draw. The T3 tournament is known as a breeding ground for future upper-tier stars. Scouts have flocked to league space to evaluate the talent that will be playing at various venues across the system's 5 worlds and 2 colonies. Without a doubt, many players will leap from T3 squads and join the rosters of T2 and T1 teams. Chapter 28, The Tier 3 Tournament. The last time Quentin had been in the stadium, confetti had been falling. Lights had been glaring. His teammates had been celebrating, and he'd stood on a podium, lifting the Galaxy Bowl MVP trophy high into the air. And what better way to add even more memories to the shipyard, home of the relegated Hitone Hullwalkers, than by hanging out with Becca, Chodo, and Fred, watching the T3 tourney and scouting for potential new Krakens. They sat in a luxury box designed to hold about 20 sentients comfortably. Seeing as there were only 4 of them, they had plenty of room, although Becca sat in the seat to his right, leaning against him slightly. Hokor was in another luxury box. Quentin had heard Greedock was in the stadium as well, but he hadn't seen either of them. Quentin could finally relax and appreciate what he and his team had accomplished. No need to worry about Janine, Petra's crazy doomsday prophecy, Greedock's next move, his contract, or anything else. For once, Quentin was happy in all phases of his life, and he reveled in the moment. He angled his bowl of chili cheese fries toward Becca, Sure you don't want some? She looked longingly at the messy food, then sighed and shook her head. Suit yourself, Quentin said. He lifted a bunch of fries to his mouth, dripping some chili on his pants as he did. Quentin reached down to the next row and offered the bowl to Fred, who grabbed a handful of fries. Somehow, his fingers didn't touch any chili in the process. He didn't even look up from his message board as he ate. Fred, are you reading a book? Very observant, Quentin, Fred said. Can't put one past you. Chodo recommended it. Why are you reading? This is the championship game. Fred looked up. This is the 16th game we've watched in the last 2 weeks, and football is boring to begin with. Boring? You think football is boring? Fred shrugged. Oopsie, my little secret is out. Well, then why did you come with us? Fred lowered the message board. You won the Galaxy Bowl. You're a higher profile individual now, even higher than before, and that's saying something. You never know when you'll need protection. And I'd like piloting the Hypatia.
Fred is right,
Chodo said. The warrior sat a row back, making sure he was between the door and his shamacath.
You should be protected at all times, Quentin. That is my responsibility, but I am happy to have Fred's help whenever possible. Fred is far more dangerous than he looks.
Fred bowed his head. Why, thank you, Chodo the Bright. I will take that as a compliment.
You are most welcome, Fred. Are you enjoying Hot Midnight?
More than this game, I'll tell you that for free, Fred said, then returned to his reading. Quentin shook his head. Some people just didn't understand football, it seemed. He turned around in his seat and offered the chili fries to Chodo. Chodo's eyes swirled with blues and violets. The warrior couldn't hide his disgust.
No, thank you, he said.
Chodo offered his own half-full bowl to Quentin.
Spider snacks?
Quentin's lip curled at the sight of deep-fried tarantulas. I'm good, he said, and focused on his chili. Becca eased back into the luxury box's cushioned seats. She looked past the half-empty stands to the field below. The T3 tourney was important, sure, but mostly to people whose business was football. For fans in general, there wasn't that much interest in the Vosor 7 Ebony Wolves going up against the underdog Kendall Tallies for the T3 championship. Unless those were your home teams, why spend the money to travel when you could watch the championship game on Holo? Especially when Chick McGee and Masara the Observant were announcing. Becca liked fries. Loved them, actually, but she was already in training for the upcoming T1 season. She was on a strict diet to facilitate lean muscle development. She also ran every morning, lifted every afternoon, did coordination development drills, and just about anything she could do while away from the Kraken's training facilities. Quentin wasn't that worried about his own conditioning, even though he'd gained a few pounds during the trip to Earth. So much good food there, and the 2 weeks he'd spent at Becca's parents hadn't helped. Becca's mother cooked nonstop, serving up kielbasa, sauerkraut, fried cheese curds, and a dozen other dishes that Quentin's mind couldn't remember, but his tongue would never forget. Soon, he'd have to start training hard to shed that extra fat and get back into playing shape. But not today, Mr. Chili Cheese Fries. Not today. He might as well eat, because it wasn't like he needed to pay attention to the game. He was supposed to be scoping for new talent, but the Krakens were stacked at almost every position. There was little chance any new players could make it on the final roster. Becca, on the other hand, was watching intently. She called up the holocard of a bulky, heavy G female dressed in the Tally's yellow and brown uniform. Nancy Wolf, she said. An excellent fullback. She's the reason the Tally's running back is having such a great game.
Well, she's an ass-kicker, all right, Quentin said. But with you and Kolpor, we don't have room for another fullback. What do you think of Rodriguez, the Tally's QB? He better than Yitzhak?
Becca's lips pressed into a thin line.
Word is the Ichibana Movables are already in negotiations to sign Rodriguez.
Quentin grunted, then ate more fries. Ichiban was Tier 2 in the Tower Conference. A big step up for Rodriguez. Was he good enough to compete for a Tier 2 starting position? Quentin set his bowl on the floor.
He activated his palm-up display, made a note to talk to Greedock about Rodriguez. With Pine gone, the Krakens needed a solid backup QB. Maybe someone behind Yitzhak, or, more likely, someone young enough who would take the number two spot on the depth chart while Zach stayed at third string.
Rodriguez's center is good, too, Quentin said. Maybe I'll have Greedock look into him. I kind of have my heart set on Josh Athanas, though, that heavy G from Kaparna. We need to find our center of the future before Budo retires.
Budo Schweck, the starting center, was heading into his 29th GFL season. Most key linemen were lucky to make it past 20 before retirement. Budo was solid as a rock, but he couldn't last forever. Becca leaned away from Quentin, glared at him.
Get a future replacement for Budo and just kick Gonta Kappel to the curb. Is that what you mean, Q?
What the hell was she mad about all of a sudden? Gantau was the backup center. 22 seasons in the league and his skill was fading fast.
Gantau's had a great run, Becca, but we're only as good as our backups. We have to increase our depth at center.
Her face clouded over.
We're only as good as our backups, right, Q?
She'd practically yelled that. Fred lowered his message board to watch the exchange. Chodo dutifully looked in another direction.
That's right, Quentin said,
careful to keep his voice neutral. Sometimes Becca got mad and he didn't understand why. This was one of those times.
That's how our business works. Is there something about Ganta that you want me to know?
She held the glare for a moment, then looked back down to the field. She sighed and wiped away Nancy Wolf's holo card.
It is what it is, Becca said. Let's just enjoy the game.
Her voice had returned to normal volume, but it was cold, distant. She was furious with him. He hadn't said anything wrong, at least as far as he knew. He hated it when she was mad at him. It hadn't happened often in the last few months they'd been together, but when it had, he'd found himself searching for a way to make her forget about it, even when he hadn't done anything to deserve it. He wasn't going to let this ruin the day. He'd held an idea in reserves for weeks for an occasion just like this, and now seemed the best time to spring it.
Becca, your contract is up for renegotiation, right?
She nodded, but kept her eyes on the field.
Greedock is paying you peanuts. I know you really don't care about money, but you should at least get what you're worth. When we get back to Ionath, how about I introduce you to my agent?
She looked at him again. Maybe a bit surprised. Some of her anger faded away.
You want Danny Lundy to represent me?
He nodded.
Sure. You're the best fullback in the game. You deserve an agent that will get you what you're worth. You could meet with him, then you could decide for yourself.
Becca stared for a few moments, as if evaluating what he had said. Then she pursed her lips and nodded.
Okay, she said. That sounds great.
She turned to watch the game, but leaned lightly against his right shoulder. Whatever she'd been mad about, offering up Danny Lundy seemed to have made her feel better. He put his arm around her, and she snuggled a bit closer. Maybe the timing of Quentin's offer had been a bit placating, but the intent was genuine. Becca really was the best fullback in the game. Danny Lundy would make sure she was paid as such. Chapter 29, The Blessing. The limo slid to the edge of 7th Ring Road and stopped near the curb. Quentin sat in the back with Becca and Chodo. Chodo got out first to make sure the way was clear of danger, or at least any overzealous Kraken's fans. Quentin glanced at Becca. She looked nervous, and he couldn't blame her.
It'll be fine, he said.
Chodo signaled the coast was clear. Becca and Quentin quickly walked inside. A Quith worker, probably the building manager, hovered in the lobby, at the ready, just in case anyone needed anything. Chodo's glare kept the worker at a distance. The building was older than John's, but still very nice.
Maybe three decades earlier, this had been one of Ionath City's fanciest addresses. The place had aged well. It seemed the ideal address for a woman with three boys earning Tier 1 paychecks.
Ma Tweedy's building seems secure,
Chodo said.
I will escort you up.
Quentin turned to Becca.
Ready?
Becca stared at the floor.
She has to hate me, Q. I'm sure of it.
She doesn't. That's not like Ma.
In truth, Quentin had no idea what Ma Tweedy felt. Becca had been engaged to one of the woman's sons, had broken that off, and was now seriously dating another. Just last night, Quentin, Becca, Fred, and Chodo had returned from the T3 tournament. Quentin had delivered his scouting report to Greedock and Hokor. It looked like the Krakens would try to sign Josh Athanas, or another backup center, as well as Rodriguez as the new backup quarterback. With that bit of business done, it was time to tell Ma Tweedy that he was dating Becca. Becca had introduced him to her parents, now it was his turn to do the same. Of course, one of Ma Tweedy's sons had already introduced her to Becca, which made this rather nerve-wracking. Would Ma take it in stride? Would she support Quentin's decision, as she always seemed to do, or would she disown Quentin and side with her biological son? If she did the latter, he couldn't blame her. He hadn't meant to do it, but he had stolen John's girl.
Becca, if you don't want to go up, I'll tell her myself. It's okay.
Becca thought for a moment, then shook her head.
No, I won't hang you out to dry. We'll do it together.
She took his hand, and they walked to the elevator. The elevator opened to the 8th floor, and to a massive key. Chodo stepped out first. Everyone had known the key would be waiting there. Lil Akuit had once played for the Orbiting Death when Ju was on the OS1 roster, but Lil's career had vanished thanks to serving 2 years in prison for assault. When he got out of jail, Ma had found various excuses to hire the key. Ma made sure Lil had money and didn't need to turn to crime. When Ma had moved from Madarch to Ionath City, she'd brought Lil along. The key led them past empty apartments. Quentin knew they were empty because he, John, and Ju had bought Ma the entire 8th floor. Quentin had been to Ma's place at least 100 times before. As with most visits, he smelled chocolate chip cookies before he even reached the door. This time, however, coming to Ma's didn't feel like coming home. It felt like he was about to see a judge who could sentence him to a lifetime of pain. He knocked. The door opened immediately. Ma was dressed in Kraken's orange and black, the only color she wore since Ju had joined the team 3 seasons back. Her shoulders were persistently shrugged up near her ears, and her eyes squinted so tight one might have thought the woman blind.
"Hello, honey," Ma said.
She held out her arms.
"It's been so long. Give me a hug."
Quentin knelt on one knee. Ma was 5 feet tall, if that, which meant kneeling was the only way he could hug her without bending awkwardly at the waist. Ma Tweedy kissed his cheek, then held him tightly.
"Julius told me what happened in the Portath Cloud," she said. "I'm so proud of you and your brothers, rescuing Janine like that."
Quentin's heart surged with love. No matter how much time he spent with her, he would never grow accustomed to her unconditional love and support.
"Thanks, Ma.
Ow! Shush it!" Ma said.
She had grabbed Quentin's ear and now twisted it so sharply that to pull away might mean leaving it behind.
"You listen good, Quentin Barnes. If you ever try a stunt like that again without telling me first, then you might as well not come home, because if the spooky aliens don't kill you, I will. You never go somewhere dangerous without talking to your mother first. Do you understand me?"
But Ma..."
She twisted the ear harder.
Yes, I understand."
She eased off on the twist, but didn't let go.
"Good. And what do you have to say for going off without telling me?"
"Sorry, Ma," Quentin said. "We didn't want to upset you."
She released his ear. Still kneeling, he rubbed at it, wondering if he'd have to see Doc Patat to make sure everything remained properly attached.
I already lectured your brothers, Ma said. You don't get to decide for me if I worry about you, Quentin. That's my decision to make. Understand?
He stood.
Yes, Ma, I understand. You talk to John? He's back?
She nodded with both head and shoulders.
He just got in last night.
If John was back, that probably meant Janine and the others were back as well. Quentin hoped he could see her after this visit. He wanted to hear all about her trip to Prawad Space. Ma looked up at Becca.
Well, girlie, you got a lot of brass showing up here.
Becca stared at the hallway floor.
I'm sorry to bother you. I should go.
Ma held up a hand.
I like brass, girlie. Both of you get inside before the cookies get cold. You too, Chodo. Don't think I forgot how much you like my baked centipede pie.
Quentin found himself on Ma's living room couch, sitting next to Becca, each of them holding an oversized chocolate chip cookie and a glass of milk. The walls, tables, and shelves strained under the weight of holoframes showing the three boys in action on the football field, along with lumpy sculptures, simple drawings, homemade I Love My Ma cards, and other mementos of the Tweety brothers' childhoods. Cookie in hand, Quentin told Ma the story of how he'd come to love Becca. The knot in his chest hung large and painful, anxiety building as he waited for Ma's reaction.
So that's it, he said. Me and Becca are together.
Ma nodded her wrinkled head.
The heart wants what the heart wants, she said. Stranger things have happened.
The knot started to ease.
So you're not mad?
Ma waved her hand dismissively.
You kids and your hormones, who can keep track of what the hell is going on? It's not like you kicked a puppy, Quentin. You're obviously treating this girl right. Seems like you're not tomcatting around on her. And if you do, I'll tell you right now, you can kiss that ear goodbye, because I'll twist it right off your thick skull. You didn't intentionally try to hurt your brother, and that's what matters.
Becca lowered her cookie.
You're not mad at me, either?
Ma walked to her. With the 6'6" Becca seated on the couch, Ma was able to give her a proper hug.
No, I'm not mad.
She held Becca at arm's length.
But I will tell you right now that if you wind up dating Julius next, that will be a pattern, not an accident. And I don't give a damn how big you are. That will piss me off. Do you think you want to piss me off, Rebecca?
A wide-eyed Becca shook her head.
No, ma'am.
Good girl,
Ma said. They heard a knock at the apartment door. A heavy knock, the kind made by someone who doesn't know his own strength.
Ah, on time for once in his life, Ma said. Like my Nana Richardson used to say, if something's got to break, the sooner you break it, the sooner you pick up the pieces.
Quentin had a sudden sinking feeling. Ma Tweedy opened the apartment door. There stood her son, John. Quentin stood up quickly, accidentally sloshing a bit of milk onto Ma's carpet. Becca started to stand, then sat, not sure what to do. The situation could not have been more awkward. John stepped inside and closed the door behind him. He smiled wide.
Hey, Q! Hey, Becca! Good to... Are those cookies?
In a minute, Jonathan, Ma said. First, your brother has something to tell you.
But Ma, cookies. Q got one and I didn't, and that's not...
Shush it!
John winced.
Sorry, Ma. Okay, Q. I'm listening.
Quentin didn't know what to say. Ma had set this up. Better to break it so you can start picking up the pieces? What kind of logic was that? She pointed at Quentin.
Out with it, boy. You tell your brother what you did and where things stand.
Quentin swallowed hard.
John, I...
100 false stories flashed through Quentin's head, anything to avoid telling John the hard truth. But it was too late for that.
And
that was the kind of thing Greedock would do.
Me and Becca are dating.
John nodded.
I know, but what is it you need to tell me?
Tell you, no, John, that's it. Becca and I are dating.
John's face wrinkled.
That's it?
Quentin nodded. John shrugged.
Okay.
He seemed fine with it. More than fine. He seemed like it wasn't even news to him.
But you were so mad before, Quentin said. In the Portath Cloud, before you hit me, you told me everything was okay, but are you sure you're okay with this?
John rolled his eyes.
Jeez, Q, I was mad, but it's not like I could stay mad forever. You're my brother, right?
John smiled, waiting. Quentin had dreaded this moment for months, yet it was going so smoothly. Maybe the ties of family really were as strong as people said.
Right, he said. I'm your brother.
Exactly,
John said.
And I know Becca didn't dump me to be mean or anything. She's not like that.
He looked at her.
You're not like that, Becca.
No, I'm not, she said. I don't think so, anyway.
I was hurting all but these things happen. What's important here is that brothers forgive brothers. Forgiveness, Q, and tolerance, and understanding, and stuff like that, and...
Ma tapped John on the arm.
You've got diarrhea of the mouth again, she said. Quentin did what he had to do. Now it's your turn.
Jeez, Ma, I'm getting to it, okay? Anyway, Q, I was mad, but I ain't anymore because I got another girlfriend. That's what I came here to tell you. You know what Ma says about how if something has to break?
He walked to the apartment door and opened it. There stood Janine. John took her hand and led her inside.
Q, you're dating my ex-fiance, and I'm dating your sister.
Quentin stared. The image wouldn't process in his brain.
John is a killer. I've seen him kill sentients with his bare hands. Dating my... Wait, what?
He looked at Janine. She smiled, slid her arms around John's big bicep.
Dating your sister, she said.
John held up both hands in a placating gesture. The words, "Don't worry, I did the maths," scrolled across his forehead.
Now, Q, I know you're thinking that I'm your brother and Janine is your sister. So therefore, ergo proctology hoc, I am Janine's brother, and therefore it's incest. But I checked with the scientist, and it turns out things don't work that way. Who would have known, right? And also, I don't like the smell of incest. I don't know why people burn those little sticks. They kind of stink.
You can't date her, Quentin said in a monotone. You can't.
Becca stood.
Of course he can, Quentin. Anyone can tell they're in love.
Quentin remembered his conversation with Becca in the Hypatia's gallery, how she had laughed when Quentin said he dreaded giving John the news.
You knew, he said to Becca. You knew and you didn't tell me.
I guessed, she said. Just because I knock the crap out of people on the football field doesn't mean I'm not a girl, Quentin. I could see the way Janine looked at John and the way John looked at her.
John tapped his temple.
See that, Q? I told you Becca was smart.
Quentin looked at them, at Janine wrapped around John's arm, but he only saw John punching a fist through a Quith warrior's eye in a nightclub, or John in a bar fight, or John on the football field, hitting other players so hard he broke armor and bone, so hard he killed.
You can't, Quentin said.
He looked at Janine.
John's so violent, and you wouldn't come see me because you thought I was violent.
Janine's smile faded. Once again, Quentin saw the same eyes that looked back at him from the mirror, saw the same intensity.
John saved my life, she said. Not just mine, Quentin. By fighting the gouger, I think he also saved yours. He broke my jaw! He gave me another concussion!
I said I was sorry about that, John said. Look, Q, maybe this'll take some getting used to. I get that.
He put his arm around Janine, hugged her close.
I really want you to be okay with this, but if you're not, well, it won't change anything.
Quentin looked at Janine. She stared back, didn't say a word to the contrary. He looked at Ma, hoping someone could help him make sense of this.
The heart wants what the heart wants, Quentin,
Ma said.
Now stop being a dumbass and tell them that you're happy for them.
Janine, his only family, and John had saved her. John Tweedy, the nightmare of a linebacker, who apparently couldn't tell the difference between incest and incense, had defeated the gouger not because of size or strength or speed, but because of a brilliant strategy. Quentin wanted to think he would have won that duel, but in his heart, he knew that wasn't the truth. He would have fought, he would have died, and Janine would have lived out her years as a slave. Quentin's anger and confusion faded away. He loved John. He loved Janine. John was violent, sure, but so was Quentin. So was Becca, for that matter. Being violent helped make them the athletes they were. John was genuine, caring, and loyal. Who better to date his sister?
I'm sorry, Quentin said. It takes some getting used to is all. You don't need my blessing, but you have it anyway.
John raised his fists in victory.
Sweet! Boy, am I glad that's taken care of. But man, I really want some cookies. Ma, can I have some cookies before Quentin eats them all?
Ma shook her head in exasperation.
You'd think you never had a cookie in your entire life.
I've never had these cookies, Ma, and they smell way better than incest.
Janine started laughing. She walked to Quentin, put her arms around his neck, and pulled herself up to kiss his cheek.
I love you, little brother, she said. This'll turn out great. You'll see.
He hugged her, lifted her off her feet as if she weighed nothing at all.
I hope so, he said. But it's a little weird that my brother is dating my sister.
He set her down. Janine nodded.
That is weird. Good thing John talked to a scientist, right? Although, I am a little worried. Preseason is almost here, and if word gets out I'm dating John, someone might get the bright idea they can use me to control both the Ionath offense and the defense.
She was right. She was exactly right. This would get out, eventually, and when it did, Janine would be more of a target than ever.
Turns out I have a solution to that, Quentin said. Let's talk about your living arrangements.
That was The Champion, episode number 14. You guys know what's coming now. Next week, The Champion, episode 15, we get into the preseason.
That's right. Put on those pads, put on that helmet, tighten up those shoelaces, and get on the line. It's time for sprints.
As my coach would have often said in high school, I want you to run laps until I get tired of watching you. Now, the beauty is, you can listen to The Champion. You don't even have to run laps, but you can. If you want to listen to this while you're running laps, that's okay with me. I run every morning. You guys could run too. Be a little healthy. Who knows? I'm very excited. We're finally through the first 15 episodes, or first 14 episodes of The Champion. Heading into episode 15, it's football season, boys and girls. It is football season, and it's going to be kind of awesome. I will be back next week with that episode. Just want to remind you, if you are buying anything from Empty Set Entertainment from us to send as a gift, and a lot of people do every year, please remember, in the United States, if you're shipping it to someone in the United States, get your order in by noon Pacific time on December 16th. I still think if you've got a teenager or a preteen or 20-something, you know, any age, who's into sports and you want to turn them on to the GFL series, the rookie's $10. The whole series together, $40. And trust me, when they're all up on the shelf or you open up that box and you see all four of them together, that is a very, very pretty sight. Very dense, colorful, and most important, very girthy.
That's it for this week. We will be back next week with week one of the preseason of the upcoming GFL campaign. And I will talk to you all real soon. You have been listening to The Champion, Book 5 in the Galactic Football League series, written and performed by author Scott Sigler, produced by A. Kovacs, and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on the author and for more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Heaven's a Lie by the band Lacuna Coil.